Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Krishna,
Hare Hare, Hare Rama,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Hare Krishna,
can somebody summarize one of the sentences what we discussed yesterday? Everything has to have purpose. Every mechanism should have a purpose. Okay? Yes. It's behind?
Who is the control of the system?
Yeah?
Who is the control of the system?
Every system has to have a controller, and so God is the controller of the whole universe. Okay? Yes. Every object in this universe is a creator, so naturally the universe also has to have a creator. Okay. Anything else you remember, striking point here? Yes. Human being has to have the nature of inquisitiveness. Not only about eating and sleeping, but also to inquire about the higher truths in life. What is this world? Who is God? What is the purpose of life? Modern times people say, there is no time. I am not interested. Animals cannot ask, why am I suffering? What is this world? They won't ask such questions. But human beings can ask. Okay. Thank you. Anything else you remember from yesterday's class? Yeah? Yes. Universe is the nature of God. So when you say nature, it is God's nature. It is not just nature is blindly producing everything. Without God's intervention, nature cannot produce. Yeah. Let's give some chance to ladies, Matajis also. Any madam, any of you would like to say one point? You remember from yesterday's class? Just one point. Yeah, you liked it? The Indian government, universal government. Yeah, what do you remember from that? Indian government. Yeah. So what did you learn from that? Yeah. So what do we conclude by that table, the exercise we did? You remember one of the conclusions? Yeah. You remember? Just like behind our Indian government there is a Prime Minister. So behind the universal government there has to be a God. Otherwise things can't function like that. So yesterday the main point of discussion was the existence of God. Yeah. Even great scientists like Einstein and Newton have believed in the existence of God because they could see when they did research. I had a book with me called as Evidence of God in an Expanding Universe. So in this book, 88 scientists worldwide come together and they are giving evidences from their own field, whether it be chemistry or biology or mathematics or physics. They are giving from their point of view how they are confident that there has to be a God. They are saying about it. Like one biologist is saying, you take a leaf which has greenery, the chlorophyll. He says there are 40 chemical reactions going on in order to form the chlorophyll. The process is called as photosynthesis. So he is asking, how are these 40 chemical reactions going on? Who has put it in action? You or I has not done it. So he says, certainly there has to be a superior force. Another person is saying, there is mutual dependence you can see in this world, symbiotic relationships. Like the plants are giving out oxygen, human beings are giving out carbon dioxide, and they are exchanging. Isn't it? The cow is giving milk, which we drink, and in turn the man takes care of the cow by bathing the cow. So there are symbiotic relationships. Mother and child, the mother feeds milk to the child, nurtures the child, and raises the child. When the boy grows up, then he takes care of the older parents. Isn't it? Similarly, in society also such relationships can be seen. So many scientists are amazed at the design of the universe at every level. So today we are going to session 2, getting the eyes to see God. This light should be put up on this one. If you want to have, you can have one behind. Yeah, that's good enough. That's good enough. What happened? Hey, here. That's the switch, It'll take time to run. So, after knowing that a God exists, maybe some supreme being or supreme power,
Certainly some superior agent is there, due to which such wonderful things are happening. That much we have understood yesterday. And today we are proceeding one step ahead, getting the eyes to see God. Okay, if God exists, then how can I know about Him? How I can develop more understanding about Him? How can I get more knowledge about Him? That we are going to discuss today. To begin with, we are discussing the story of six blind men. You all must have heard about this story, isn't it, before? Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnana Anjana Shilapya Saksha Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, you must have heard it in your school days, but this story of six blind men is going to bring out a very valuable lesson for today in our discussion. There were six blind men who got to see an elephant for the first time in their lives. They had never seen an elephant before, nor had they ever heard about it. So, like you see in the picture here, one man was touching the trunk of the elephant and said, "Hey, this elephant creature, it looks like a snake," he said, because it was having a curved portion. He said, "It looks like a snake." Another fellow said, No. How do you say it's a snake? It has, you know, he saw the tusks of the elephant. And he said it is very smooth and round, and it is a taper, and it is sharp like a horn. How do you say it's like a snake? He was asking. Third fellow climbed on the top, and he was touching the ears of the elephant. He said the elephant looks like a fan. He was thinking it's a fan. Another fellow was touching the side of the elephant. And he said, "No, elephant looks like a ball. Wherever you touch, it's all flat. It looks like a big wall," he said. So another person was at the rear end of the elephant, touching the elephant's feet. And when he was feeling the leg of the elephant, it looked like a tree trunk. So he said, "Elephant looks like a tree trunk. What do you people mean? All of you are bluffing different things," he was saying. And the sixth man, you see, he is touching the tail. And he said, "The elephant looks like a rope. It's nothing more than a rope." That's all he knew about it. Now you see the pictures which are put up there. All these are different objects, you see. Isn't it? They all were thinking of totally different objects. Absolutely having no connection to one another. So what do you infer from this story? What general principles can you draw from the story of six blind men? What can you learn from it? This is an exercise for you, yeah? You don't get a total picture, isn't it? You only get a part of the understanding. So, sometimes the part understanding may also be not untrue. It may be true also, but you only get an incomplete picture. Correct? That means our understanding is incomplete. It's not complete. Okay, anything else? Thank you, that was the correct answer, yeah? So, one man is ignorant about the other details of the elephant. He only knows one small portion of the truth. He is in ignorance about the other portions of the truth. Yeah. Anything else? You can also say, isn't it? If only they had the eyes to see, they would have been able to see the whole elephant. Isn't it? So the story continues. When they were all saying all these different things, there was a learned Brahmana who was passing by, and he took pity on them. And he came close to them and said, "All of you are foolishly thinking of elephant to be all these different things. Now all of you, come to me. I will tell you how elephant looks like, because you can't see with your blind eyes. But hear the description of the elephant very carefully from me," he said. "So if you hear it attentively, then you can understand how it actually looks like." Then he described how elephant looks like. He said the elephant, it's somewhat like you see a cow or a horse standing like that. That's how the elephant also stands. It has a full form, but it is much more fatter. It has a big head, it has big ears, it has a trunk like this. So its nose of the elephant is very long. It's not like our nose. It has a long nose with which it can lift all the tree trunk and everything. And it has a tail on the back. So when they visualized it in their minds, they could immediately understand how the total elephant looks like. And all of them understood that everyone else was also saying a part of the truth. And they could, it's like a jigsaw puzzle, you know, you put them all together, then everything falls in place. Then they could see the total truth, like that. So these people had to hear from that person, learned person, to know about the elephant. So we will talk more about it at the end of the session today. When we are concluding the session, we will talk more about this. So we want to understand the super intelligence in the universe, which is God, who is the supreme organizer, designer, controller. So there are three ways of gaining knowledge. As is mentioned here, Pratyaksha Praman, Anumana Praman, Shabda Praman. Very simple. Pratyaksha means direct experience. Like you can touch and feel it, or you can see with eyes, you can hear with ears, smell with nose, taste with tongue. Pratyaksha. You yourself can experience it. Like we do experiments in our laboratory, correct? We experience it with our senses. Like you see with your eyes and you use your hands and legs to perform the experiment. It's Pratyaksha Praman. Like we say, you know, unless I see, I won't believe. Can you show me? That is Pratyaksha Praman. Anumana Praman is hypothetical truth or theories based on evidences. Which means there are some truths which you cannot directly experience. For that, you have to do some guesswork. Say, for example, there is a black box and you don't know what is inside it. Then there are four scientists who are predicting what could be inside that black box. Maybe different people may come up with different theories, hypotheses. Just like, for example, Rutherford spoke about the atom. But before Rutherford, who spoke about it? Dalton. Dalton said atom cannot be split. And Rutherford said, no, I think atom can be split, he said. Because there is a dense portion in the center, which is nucleus. Then there is a free flow cloud of electrons around it. So that is not as intense as the nucleus. So he came up with the new theory of atom based on the metal foil experiment. Rutherford came up with that. And Bohr came up with an even more detailed model. So none of them have seen the atom as such, but they came up with this theories based on different experiments. Conclusions which they arrived at based on different experiments. Similarly, Anumana Praman is hypothesis, like Avogadro hypothesis, which I know. It's a hypothesis. Hypothesis means based on different statistics and studies, you arrive at some kind of theory, that this must be the theory. Like Kepler's laws, for example. Kepler's laws of astronomy, if you see. They are based on some mathematical calculations. You know, you can't see the things happening, but based on mathematical calculations, Earth must be here, it is here, the Sun must be there, it is there. So, the summer, winter is changing because the position of Earth and Sun must be like this, you know. It's a hypothesis based on mathematical calculation. So that is Anumana Praman. And Shabda Praman means Vedas, hearing from the Vedic authority. So we have these three different Pramanas, authoritative evidences which give us knowledge. And we are going to discuss in detail about these three in the coming slides. Pratyaksha Praman. According to Pratyaksha Praman, whatever you see, only in them you should believe. Seeing is believing. But the problem is there are many things that we see but we don't believe in them. We have given a few examples here. Have you done this experiment? You take a pencil or a stick and you put it in a beaker. It appears broken. You all have seen it? How many of you have seen it? Correct, you have seen it, right? Now when you put it. But is it really broken? Why does it appear broken? Law of reflection, yeah. So you may know that the law of reflection makes you see it to be broken, although it is not actually broken. But whatever the law may be there, your eyes tell you that it is broken. Correct? So seeing is not believing. If you believe in what you see, then you have to assume that it is broken. Same way with a man looking into the convex mirror or concave mirror. Have you seen your face in a concave mirror? How it looks like? No, it looks like a huge face, isn't it? Or you see in a convex mirror how it looks. Sometimes in the museums and all they keep different big, big convex concave mirrors. You go and see in one mirror, you look very skinny. Huh? Another mirror, you look very fat. None of it is true. Huh? Seeing is not believing. So can you add more examples to this? The examples of, there are many things you see, but you don't believe. There are many things you see, but you don't believe. Yeah?
Mirage,
correct. You all know what's a mirage. Huh? Mirage means, it looks like a river flowing in the road in a hot sunny day. But there is no river there. You go near, there is no water there. Huh? That's mirage. Anything else?
Rainbow.
Yeah?
Rainbow.
Rainbow, yeah. Rainbow looks like a very beautiful, colorful band on the sky. You know, there is nothing existing there. Huh? It is only like a, due to the light reflection, it looks like that. Huh? Anything else? Of course, there are reasons for Rayleigh scattering and all that reason they will give why the sky is blue. But I am asking other examples besides the mirage type of examples. Other than that, you can think of railway line, for example. Is railway line not appearing to be converging at a point? Is railway line really converging? No. But it appears to you like that, right? And you see, gradually it becomes narrow. You know, in the engineering drawing, we do this perspective in the first year, where you do perspective drawing. Because your eyes make you think it is converging, although it never meets at all. Anything else you see but you don't believe? Yeah. Again, say that. You can't see that? Right. Actually, according to Shastra, all the light emitting objects, they derive their light only from the sun. Even these chemicals now in this fluorescent bulbs also, the chemicals actually absorb the light from the sun and store it, and later on they give it out. Just like the coal which is buried underground, how it gets light? I mean, how it gets the flammable properties? Because they are buried underground, and they have, there is actually a literal burning taking place, and it absorbs the fire and it stores in it. It becomes blackish. Later on, it releases that kind of heating capability. So all the light emitting objects, they derive their light from the sun only. Yeah. So coming to this point, there are many things you see but you don't believe, but there are also things which you don't see but you believe in them. Can you think of some? What are the things that you don't see but you believe? Air. Air exists. You can't see it, but you know. You can feel it. What else? Smell also, yeah. Smell cannot be seen with eyes, but it can be perceived by the nose. Anything else? X-rays, for example. X-rays, alpha rays, beta rays, gamma rays, even the AM waves and FM waves. The television. When you put a television, you can know. Electrons, for example, yeah. There are many things which you can't see with eyes, but you believe in that. America, for example. Maybe some of you have gone to America. But those of you who haven't been to America, still you believe that America exists, right? Because people have gone and come. You talk to them. Similarly, you believe that Gandhi existed, right? Anybody thinks here maybe Gandhi didn't exist? They have cooked a big story about him. So, we believe in many things which we have not seen with eyes, but we have put faith in them. Because there is no possibility of seeing them. You cannot see Gandhi now. If anyone has to say that, no, unless Gandhi comes before me, I won't put faith that he existed. Can't say that. So, there are many things we put faith which we have not seen, but we believe in them. Similarly, there are things which we see with eyes, but we don't believe that they exist, as we have given examples. Which goes to show that we cannot acquire absolute knowledge through material senses. Our scientific knowledge is relative. Do you understand what is relative knowledge? Relative knowledge means it's not absolute knowledge. For example, if you ask any of you, what is the color of the wall? You may say it is half white. But actually, according to scientists, they say it is certainly some color other than what you are seeing. Scientists are saying. You are seeing it as half white because The white light reflects on the wall in a certain way and it enters your eyes, which makes you think that it is half white. But actually it is certainly some color other than what you see. That's what they are saying. That's the scientist. Very surprising, no? Isn't it? So the knowledge we get is relative. It's not absolute knowledge. Absolute knowledge means you can confidently say that this is the truth. And there is no other possibility of this being anything else. You can't say like that about anything. Can any scientist say that now we have arrived at the ultimate truth and this truth will never change? Can they say? Once Srila Prabhupada was talking to one of the devotees who was taking the role of a scientist. So that devotee, taking on the role of scientist, was playing the devil's advocate, you know. So he was saying, Swamiji, why do you always condemn scientists? Then Prabhupada was saying, because you don't know the truth, but you are posing as if you know the truth. You are presenting the truth. Then that scientist says, that actually what we know today is more truer than yesterday's truth. Isn't it? Are we not in a better position now? Now we know what we knew yesterday was ignorance. And today we know better. Then Prabhupada asked him, so can you confidently say what you are telling today will remain truth forever and you are never going to change it tomorrow? Then he says, the scientist said, sorry, that we can't say. Tomorrow somebody may come up with a better truth and we may have to accept it. Then Prabhupada said, that means you are always in ignorance, he said. Because your truth is always changing. It's on a tottering platform. It's never permanent. And in science also the truth has been changing always. It has never been permanent. So some theories come, they are taught in the school, textbooks and everything, they remain for some time and then they are discarded at some time. And some new theories come. Like Darwin's theory was there, now they are saying some new theory called snowball theory has come up now. Similarly, there are more than 22 theories for the origin of the universe. One of them, famous one, is the Big Bang one, which we were discussing yesterday. But there are many theories which keep coming up and they are updated and modified. So what is the problem with things changing like that? I heard in Russia they used to have a particular kind of polyvinyl substance, kind of thing which they would use for filling of the teeth, you know. Doctors use, dentists use for filling the teeth and all. They were using it. Later they found out that it is poisonous and it reduces the people's life by 10 or 20 years. So as soon as the doctors came to know, only recently they came to know, immediately they wanted to take action. What action they have to take? They have to remove that, you know, fillers, what they have put. And they have to replace it with some other filler. But then when they wanted to remove that filler, some gases started coming out. Just like ammonia is very, very repellent gas, you know. Similarly, some gases started coming out, which would go into the person's stomach and it may even be fatal. It can cause instant death also. So then doctors wondered then how to remove the fillers, what we have already put. Because we didn't know in those days that it is poisonous. So they have to block the throat hole, you know, inside with some kind of, like we put polythene, some kind of thing you put here, and see to it that the gas doesn't go inside, you know. When they are releasing it, it has to all come out. And for that, the operation involves tremendous money for that. So I am giving you this example. Sometimes scientists do some mistakes for rectifying which they don't have enough talent or they have to spend a huge amount of investment for rectifying the situation. Einstein made a very brilliant statement. He said, we can commit mistakes very easily, but you cannot correct those mistakes with the very same intelligence with which we created them. That means what he says, with some intelligence, it's very easy for you to commit a mistake, but that intelligence is not enough for you to rectify the mistake. Isn't it? Just like, you know, Abhimanyu goes into Chakravyuh, he only knows how to go in, he doesn't know how to come out. Similarly, it's very easy to commit mistakes, but to rectify them is very difficult. Another true story, in Europe it happened when there was bubonic plague. So scientists are researching, what is the cause of plague? Why people are suffering from the plague disease? Then they found that the cat is the cause of this plague and it has to be immediately rooted out. They made announcements all over the country. All the cats in the country must be killed. And all the cats were killed. Not a cat could be seen anywhere. And then the scientists were researching. Some other scientists came running and saying, "Sorry, sorry, sir. Now we have found out cats are not the cause, the rats are the cause." But then now they wanted to kill the rats, but rats are multiplying in millions. Why? Cats are already killed. Because cats are doing a good job before of eating the rats. But now the cats are killed, so rats are multiplying and the plague was also increasing like anything in monstrous proportions. So, to commit a mistake is easy. Why we are giving these couple of examples now? Because if scientists say that we will only believe in pratyaksha praman based on our senses, the senses can be fallacious. It can lead to erratic results, as we will see more about this. We cannot understand the absolute truth through our blunt material senses because of the following four defects. There are four defects in us, we can see. First of all, we have imperfect senses. We will see in the next slide how we have imperfect senses. And because our senses are imperfect, we also are put into illusion. And when we are put into, you know what's the meaning of illusion? Illusion means some kind of wrong perception. Like in the night you are walking, there is a rope on the ground. You think it's a snake. That's illusion. So we have imperfect senses which make us perceive things wrongly. And then thirdly, we have a tendency to commit mistakes because of that. And we have cheating propensity. So these four are four human defects. And these are going to be explained in little detail in the next slide. First of all, one of the first defects is we have imperfect senses. Do you remember yesterday I was telling you that our eyes have a very limited range? That means our eyes are practically blind outside this limited range of 400 to 700 millimicron. Outside that, our eyes are literally blind. We can't see anything outside that. In fact, without the help of the sun, you can't even see your own hands in the morning in a pitch dark room or outside. You can't see. On Amavasya day, you try to see your hand, you can't see. We need the aid of the sun. Our ears are also deaf outside the range of 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. You all have heard of the ultrasonic whistle? You know, for the rat they use it. So, you know, the ultrasonic whistle, if you put it on, it will make a big sound. Wow, 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 big sound. And you will not hear it, but all the rats will flee. They will not come nearby. If you want to avoid the rats, you can use ultrasonic whistle. Similarly, the dogs also, when they hear the ultrasonic whistle, they will come running as if somebody is calling them. All dogs in the street will come to you. You put the ultrasonic whistle. Because that is outside the range of 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. But you can't hear anything of it. Because your ears are not in that range. So these are defects of our eyes and ears. And we can talk about every one of our senses like this. That means our senses are not all powerful. They have a very limited range of perception. That means any truth that lies outside this range, what we will claim? Yeah, what do you think human beings will claim? If any truth lies outside this range of perception? It doesn't exist, you will say. Yeah. Like for example, man never knew about bacteria before 16th century, isn't it? And one scientist found out the electron microscope and then man began perceiving bacteria after that. But even with the extended instruments like telescope or microscope, we can't know the truth in its absoluteness. We will see later how. See here, Nobel Prize winning physicist Eugene Wigner, what he says, you see. Yeah, uninformed scientists may boast, we will use the instrument outside the range for perceiving things. Isn't it? Scientists can argue, you know. Okay, you say that our eyesight is only within 400 to 700 millimicron. Now we are going to have electron microscope and telescope and everything to perceive things which are outside this range. Similarly with the ears also one may say. But Nobel Prize winning physicist Eugene Wigner, he says, even if we photograph stars, eventually we have to take in by our senses what the photo shows. Furthermore, without our senses, we cannot handle a camera. Even if we amplified or refined by instruments, the knowledge is no more perfect than our imperfect senses. It's a very deep message. You appreciate what he says? He is saying that while photographing the stars, you have to use your eyes. So naturally you are photographing it. But after you get the photograph, again you have to use your eyes for studying it. So two times imperfection goes into it. And even if you refine it with instruments, the knowledge is no more perfect than our imperfect senses, he is saying. So in order to appreciate this statement more, we have to understand what is called as optic illusion, which we will see in the future slide. Then you will appreciate the deficiencies of our eyes. So we discussed about the imperfect senses. Now we are discussing the second one, which is to be illusioned. Say for example, you have a house near the Pune station and so many trains are coming and going, isn't it? At different times. Say you have kept a cooker in the kitchen and the cooker is making a hissing sound. Sometimes you may think the hissing sound, what you are hearing from the cooker, is the sound of the train, isn't it? It's very likely, the sound. Because sometimes you go and see, peep out of the window, there is no train there. And then you realize it was the sound of the cooker. Sometimes you can commit mistake. It's illusion of the ears. An illusion of the tongue, you take the same orange juice or something. First you put sugar in your tongue and then you take orange. The orange will taste sour. First you take little lemon, put in your tongue and then you put orange, it will taste sweet. The very same orange gives you two different tastes. That's the illusion of the tongue. Similarly, the skin, the same temperature water. If you put your hand in hot water and then touch this water, this will appear colder. If you touch chill water and then you touch this water, it will appear hotter. You will see that. So, our senses become conditioned to the environment and then give you wrong perceptions. They don't give you correct perception. That's called as an illusion. Can you guess what truth can you see in darkness? See, this is the dark. Somebody can guess what you see? Let us hear some three or four guesses. This is the night time. Animals, how many animals? Any other guesses? Yeah? Flowers you can see, that part you can see clearly, yeah. Is it? It's saying animal is holding a bag of flower in the mouth. Very nice guess, no? Isn't it? Now you'll see in the next slide what the truth is. Elephant, is it? Still he remembers our first elephant. What is elephant doing? Okay, so I don't want to put you into too much trouble. I will show you in the next slide, you can see what it is. See, this is the truth. When the sun rises, the darkness is dispelled. When perfect knowledge is obtained, all illusion is dispelled. So somebody is carrying a bag of flowers and running, and the dog from the big, the bulldog is watching from the side. You see that? So this is the truth. Now if you want to see, now you can make it, isn't it? So you could not see the person, running person, because of pitch darkness. So why we gave this example, why did we show this? If we are groping in the dark, we cannot know the truth. With our imperfect senses and our illusion, we will not be able to know the truth. Now we are going to do a group work. You all can make the group like yesterday. In the next slide, there are three pictures. And you have to find out, you have to use your creativity and identify two different ways of perceiving each of the pictures. And you also have to say, what do you infer from such observations? So these are the pictures. So you can form groups like yesterday, same groups. So we will ask you, what do you perceive? Yeah. You remember your groups yesterday? Yeah. Yes, we form the same group. And here also one group can sit here. Yeah. Very carefully you have to observe the pictures. It's not very easy. You have to very intensely observe the pictures. All of you ready now? So we will go from the first group. You can say figure 1, what do you see? Okay, you figure 3, you are ready? Okay, we will not ask you now. We will come by one by one. Figure 1, who can say about figure 1? Okay, what do you see?
Figure 1, actually there is no triangle. If the triangle is
nearby,
the
angle in it will. Yeah.
They are
placed at the triangle. Yeah. So, your eyes are seeing a white triangle which does not exist. That means the eyes can tell you that something is existing which is actually not existing due to the orientation of the object. This is called imaginative vision, we call it. Huh? Thank you. And figure 2, who can say which group is ready with answer? You are able to see both?
I see a world.
In your group, anybody else saw an old woman in that? How many of you can see an old woman also? Oh, very few. Yeah? The second one. The figure 2. Yeah. That's the extreme right one. You have to see a young girl and old woman, both. Okay, let me ask you a question. The chin of the young girl is? Tip of the nose of the old woman. Correct? The eyes of the old woman is? The ears of the young girl. Can you see that?
See an old woman.
See, this is nose of the old woman, this is the mouth, and this is chin. Now you can see old woman? Can see? She is like this. And this is the ear of the young girl, and this is the eyes, the cheeks, and the chin. Now you can see clearly? Yeah. Okay, figure 3, you are ready? Figure 3? So I forgot to tell you, the second picture is called as contextual vision. You may take, like one of you may be seeing a young girl, another may be seeing an old woman, and both may be arguing. What I am saying is the truth, correct? Because you are only taking one part of the truth. That means you reject the other part of the truth. You take only one part. Just like Newton's corpuscular theory and Huygens, isn't it? Phase theory, you know, there is a quarrel between the two. Whether light is traveling as particles or waves. So, ultimately they found light is doing both. In some cases light is traveling as particles, in some cases waves. Similarly, sometimes we may hold on to one part of the truth only, our eyes are seeing. The other part is not seeing. Just like the blind, six blind men and the elephant. Same way. Our eyes tell us only one part of the truth. What do you see in the third picture? Well, acha, these two, Oh, he is not saying Hare Krishna. One is keeping hand like this, okay? The other one? Playing guitar. Yeah, one is playing guitar, other one is raising hand like this. Yeah. What else you see? There's one old woman who is also standing near the door and watching this. Isn't it? Correct. The earring. And also, from a distance when you see, this looks like one old man and old woman looking at one another. Correct? You're able to see that. So some people may only perceive the old man and woman seeing at one another. They may not see anything else. But if you come closer, you see many, many more details you see. Isn't it? There is a metallic waves. That's correct. Behind them. Yeah, yellow color. If you carefully observe, there are so many things you can observe in this. Yeah. So, many people may only observe part of the truth. They may not observe the whole truth. So, what do you see in this? Something special you will observe. See it very closely. Anybody which is? What appears to be moving?
It's not moving, but it is not actually moving.
Yeah, there are three vertical cylinders. You can see? There are three vertical cylinders that are revolving. But is anything revolving?
No.
Why do we feel it's revolving?
Because of eyes.
Because of the illusion of the eyes. See, it looks like as if some activity is taking place. There is no activity going on here. So believe it or not, all these three guys are all of the same height. Can you believe? But they are of the same height. If you want, you can take a scale and measure them. They are of the same height. This guy looks small and the view looks tall, isn't it? But they all are of the same height. Because of the lines which are put behind them, it looks like that. So, look at only the point in the center and move your face towards it and away from it. Move like this, towards it and away from it. What do you find? You can see that, right? One is rolling. Yeah. Anti-clockwise, yeah. All of you tried it? This is also due to illusion of the eyes. See, what do you find? Certainly a 2D picture drawn on a sheet cannot be moving like this, you know. It is simply because of the illusion of the eyes. Can you guess what it is? Some of you say bridge, some of you say ships, isn't it? Depending on which truth you select, your eye selects. Yeah. So till now we were seeing optic illusion. These are all illusions of the eye. Eyes can cheat us in this way. So that means this is a proof that our eyes are defective. The eyes are telling you things which are actually not there. Eyes are saying some things are moving although they are stationary. The eyes are telling you there is a white triangle which doesn't exist at all there. There are so many illusions we can show. So we talked about imperfect senses and to be illusioned. And when we are illusioned, what do? We commit mistakes. That's the subsequent step. Even in the field of science, many widely incorrect accounts were there before. Like brain was thought of like a radiator in a car. They thought that, you know, the blood goes to the brain, gets cooled and then comes down to different parts of the body. That's what scientists are thinking. What a strange understanding about the brain. The brain was thought of as an organ to cool the blood. Now we understand that actually the brain is the center which controls all the different activities of the body, isn't it? It gives direction to different limbs of the body. Similarly, the medical researchers, they call something as a vestige. You know what is a vestige? Vestige is considered to be that part of the body which is useless, which doesn't have any function. So there are two classes of scientists amongst the medical researchers. One is called as an evolutionist, another one is called as a creationist. The creationists say that everything was created by God. All these bodies which we all have, this kind of bodies are creation of God. But evolutionists say that the bodies have evolved gradually over a period of time. From amoeba, from different ones, unicell, multicellular and all that. They evolved from apes, human beings have come. So they always have a tug of war between them, creationists and evolutionists. Now evolutionists argue that this body should not have been created by God. You know why? Because they say if really God created it, why there are some vestiges in the body? You see, for example, there is an appendix here at the end of this thing. Similarly, in your throat you will see a small tongue kind of thing inside, where you get the tonsils. Similarly, they also had included a dozen items, one of which was pituitary glands also, which they considered to be a vestige in those days. But later, medical research showed that none of these vestiges are vestiges. None of these vestiges are a waste in the body. Why? Because all the so-called vestiges, they start functioning at a particular period of time in the body. Just like, for example, in a woman's body, the mammary glands, they secrete milk only when she gets a child. And then she gives milk to the child and the child grows up, again the mammary glands stop giving milk anymore. So that means they are only active during a particular period of time. Similarly, they found out that all the so-called vestiges, which they thought of to be vestiges, They are functional only at a particular period of time in the body, and they are not a waste. And the greatest joke was this pituitary glands. The pituitary glands was thought of to be a waste part of the body. Can you imagine if somebody removed the pituitary glands? Now today, pituitary glands are called as the master glands in the body. You know, the hypothalamus gland, the pituitary glands, and then the hypothalamus gland, the medulla oblongata, which we say, and below there is spine. So they say the endocrine orchestra, they call it, which is the emotions that we feel, the anger or love or compassion or kindness, all these emotions we feel, that's called as endocrine orchestra, they say, which leads to secretion of adrenaline and you know, endorphin and all that. The whole thing is controlled by whom? Pituitary glands. Can you imagine? That's master glands. And that was considered to be a waste part of the body by the medical researchers. So, such great mistakes were committed in the past. Similarly, three astronomers recently discovered that a significant mistake was there in the Hubble constant. This Hubble constant is a constant value utilized in the formula for measuring cosmic distances. It's a cosmic yardstick. But every time this Hubble constant would vary, then actually the distances also would vary several thousands of miles and millions of miles. It will vary. But till now the Hubble's constant has changed almost 6 or 7 times. Can you imagine? That means, you know, do you think that the distance of planets are always changing? But the Hubble's constant has been varying. So many of the scientists now laughingly call it as Hubble's variable now. Instead of calling it a Hubble's constant, because it keeps changing. So I recently heard the gravitational, the value of G, which we have, that's going to change. You heard it? Yeah. What is the current value known? 9.81. Yeah, now they are going to change that value because they are coming up with some research. So, why we are telling you this? Because science is always changing. It's not a certain truth. It's a changing truth. It's a relative truth. That means we are arriving at better and better imperfect relative truth. We are not arriving at absolute truth. We are arriving at better and better imperfect relative truth. Of course, it may be better imperfect truth, but still it is imperfect and still it is relative. That should be remembered. And what is the last thing that happens in these four defects? The cheating propensity. Because when you commit mistakes, how many of us would like to go and tell everyone that I committed this mistake? Isn't it? Generally what we try to do when we commit a mistake, like, you know, in your house also sometimes you are cleaning the house, cleaning the table, suddenly the china clay vessel, it falls from the table down on the ground, and immediately breaks into pieces, and you look around whether anyone else is there. No one is there. Put it in a cloth and throw it in the dustbin. Isn't it? You don't want others to know generally. We do commit mistakes. Why we don't want others to know our mistakes, can you say? They may get angry. That's one reason. Otherwise, in general, why do we not want others to know our mistakes? Shame, correct. Because your mind tells you that they will think I am, you know, I am stupid or I am little foolish, you know. I want to be smart. I am perfect in whatever I do. How can somebody think I am not so smart? So better hide, isn't it? That's what we generally think. So we try to hide the mistake. And that's called cheating, propensity. 1912, before talking about 1912, it would be worthwhile to say a little bit about this Darwin's theory of evolution. We are not going to go in great length about this, but you have to know in principle these two things. You know, Darwin originally wrote in his thesis in 1859, Origin of Species, he said, the absolute truth or God must have created some two or three living forms. He must have reached out. And those living forms, they gradually evolved into higher and higher forms. So Darwin said, like maybe for example, the water creatures must be created first, like amoeba, you know, and then gradually they turned into aquatic creatures, more and more aquatic creatures, and then gradually they became amphibians, you know, those which can live on water and come to land, like frogs, for example. And then he also said, and they would have developed into land animals, namely reptiles, like snakes and others. And then gradually they must have turned into birds. They must have got the wings. They must be flying. They must have evolved into birds like that. So he made a kind of theory, and we will be seeing how Darwin arrived at the theory. And it was actually a hypothetical theory. There is no proof for that. It was a hypothetical theory which Darwin predicted. And Darwin also said, if this theory is true, then you should find unicellular organisms, gradually multicellular organisms, and then gradually the evolution should take place in the way that I have said. So the scientists started becoming eager to dig out the fossils, or the, you know, the skeleton and the remnants of the buried animals and birds and everything. But strangely enough, they found the things are not in the order in which Darwin said. 20 million fossils were dug out. Still they were not in the order in which he said. Because the forms which were expected later were existing even before. Like for example, human beings, if you see the rock strata information, it shows that according to Darwin, the first human being came from the ape only 40,000 years ago. And a more modern version of man came, you know, 10,000 years ago. And then came the Homo sapiens sapiens, and then the Homo sapiens. Now, the latest man is called as the Cro-Magnon man, whom he said is the modern version of man, like all of us. And he said, we are the pinnacle of evolution. We are the most developed intelligent species amongst all, most evolved. That's what he said. But then scientists found that there are also human beings who were human skulls, which existed millions of years ago, 2 million years ago, 4 million years ago, they have found out. But many scientists are hiding it. Do you know why? Because they were afraid. Because if we expose it, then people will say that we are saying something against Darwin. So many scientists wanted to be in line with Darwin. Just like in our college days, whenever we conducted experiments, you know, beforehand only we will know that we are supposed to get a linear behavior. But then we will be getting a, you know, parabolic behavior. So what we used to do? Delete all the in-between lines, connect the first and last line. Then you get a linear behavior very easily. The 2 points, anybody can put a line. Isn't it? We do. Similarly, scientists are also hiding. Although there were many evidences to show human beings existed long, long ago, they were not exposing it. At the same time, the scientists are also feeling problems because they were not able to find out a connecting link between ape and human being. Darwin says, from ape only human being has come. But there is no connecting link. You understand what the meaning of connecting link? Connecting link means there should be at least one skull available which will have an ape-like jaw and a human-like skull. Then it will be a proof that there is evolution taking place. But they always found only human skulls or monkey skulls. They didn't find anything in between. And so they could not find a connecting link. That was a serious problem. Worldwide there were researches going on. And in 1912, one scientist came up with this human-like skull and ape-like jaw. He claimed that I have got one. It became very famous and it was kept in the British Science Museum. And in 1953, the fraud was revealed by other group of scientists who said the Piltdown, it was obtained in a place called Piltdown. He said this Piltdown man, which was kept in 1912, it is simply a cheat. Why? Because the ape-like jaw, what they are saying as ape-like jaw, is only a human jaw, which is filed suitably to look like a ape's jaw. They have used a file to file it. So they threw it out of the museum. So in this way, people indulge in cheating propensity in order to become famous. Sometimes, you know, if somebody wants to become famous, they come up with some fraud researches to put their name. Recently, there was some Korean scientist. I don't know, some of you must have read in the paper. He came. So he claimed that he did cloning of something. And he published the paper and it was accepted. He got the doctorate also. Later on, some group of scientists gathered him and they challenged him. And he confided and he admitted finally in the newspaper also that I did this cheating. I never did such a thing. It is only a hypothesis. Although he claimed that I have performed the experiment, these are the results, and he got degree also. So these things go on. In many places, this kind of cheating propensity. So, we were seeing the Pratyaksha Praman and then subsequently the four defects. So, because of these four defects, we cannot perceive the objects directly with our senses, like eyes, nose, ears and all. But what about Anumana Praman? Anumana Pramana means predicting or hypothesizing. It may have been like this, or perhaps it was like that, you know. Like, for example, Darwin never uttered a word about how originally this living forms must have originated. He only said the God must have created some 3-4 living forms, after which everything went on. But the neo-Darwinists, they said, why are you bringing God into picture, Darwin? Leave alone God. Let's not have God. They came up with a new theory called a spontaneous generation theory. You know what they are saying? They are saying, in the times of the yore, the dawn of creation, there were sands, and there were oceans, and there was a lightning in the sky. And when the lightning bolt came down the waters, immediately some living forms started moving in the water. Now you may ask, hey, how did living forms come? Somehow they came, don't ask how. There was some primordial soup. They may ask, please tell me, how did the primordial soup come? That also we don't know, don't ask. You know, because of that lightning bolt coming down, there must have been some amino acids which are produced. And those amino acids must have created the primordial soup from which the life forms must have come. But the problem is, you know, if the primordial soup enters into water of the ocean, it will undergo depolymerization and nothing can take place. Living form protein cannot develop. And if it remains outside, it will be evaporated by the cosmic rays. Then you may ask, then what happened exactly? They say, no, that's a very difficult step. Somehow or other it entered into water, but it did not become depolymerized. How? Oh, don't ask that. So in every step there is a problem. Somehow we assume that there was no depolymerization, it entered into water. Then if you see, this is the first step. So you can go to step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5, you can go. In every step, it faces problem. So one scientist, Hoyle, he says, even if the whole universe were supposed to be filled with the primordial soup, no living forms would come out of it, he says. Such is the probability. It is 1 divided by 10 to the power of 40,000. This is the probability of getting a life form by spontaneous generation. 1 divided by 10 to the power of 40,000. And such a thing doesn't exist at all. But the scientists still claim that, no, there must have been some possibility, somehow life form came. And in order to simply hold on to the postulate, they are sticking to that. So, Anumana Pramana means simply speculating about a thing. Say, for example, there is a room, and you are hearing some noise coming out of the room, and you are outside the room. What do you think could be going on inside? Squarling? There are some people inside who are catching each other's collar, slapping and beating and shouting, quarreling, that's likely, right? What are the possibilities? There will be a TV inside. There is nobody inside except the TV. There is a TV show going on. So, two men were thinking like that. One man said, there is a TV show going on. Another man said, no. There are actually people beating and killing one another. Better you come. You know, we will open the door and help them, save their lives. So when they went inside, they understood there was a drama rehearsal going on there. People are practicing a drama. So, our postulate or our theory may not necessarily be true. Many times, after all, theory, hypothesis or hypothesis, it cannot be true. Inside a black box, what's happening, we can't say. It's simply our imagination. It may be true or may not be true. So, Anumana is very dangerous. But unfortunately, majority of science focuses on either Pratyaksha or Anumana. Because they don't have a third way to find out the truth. Most of the things are like, you know, how they arrive at the truth in science, if you see, they make some prediction. In fact, in science, these words are very common. It may be like this, it may be like that, it could have been like this. Because of this, this must have come. So based on the effect, they assimilate they talk about the cause many times. But the same effect can be produced by many different type of causes also, which many times remains a theory. So, Anumana Pramana is also not a very reliable way of knowing the truth. It's not a very reliable way. Like, you know, there's a joke about Anumana Pramana. Like once, few scientists saw a cockroach, you know, it had 8 legs. So they were conducting an experiment with this cockroach. So they would tell the cockroach, run, run, you know. And the cockroach would run very fast. Then they cut the 2 legs. And they said, run, run. Then the cockroach, you know, wasn't able to move so much. It was moving a little slow. Then again they cut two more legs. There were only four. Then they said, run, run. In this way, when they cut all the legs, the cockroach was unable to move. Yeah? When they told the cockroach to move, it just got stuck up in one place. Then the scientists wrote the theory. What did they write? When the legs of the cockroach are broken, the cockroach becomes deaf. Because we are telling run, run, but it is not running. What does it mean? That means it has become deaf. The more you break the legs, it becomes deaf. What was the actual reason? Without the legs, he could not run, isn't it? So, we may arrive at a wrong postulate. And many mistakes are committed in science like that. Like, you know, one scientist was going in a boat. So, there was a small hole in the boat into which water was coming. One scientist became worried. Then he took a drill bit and put another hole. And then in the previous hole he wrote in, other hole he wrote out. And you can imagine what must have happened. The boat drowned eventually. So, our approach to understanding the things around us in this world many times defeats our purpose. Like, you know, modern man has found out so many inventions all around us, but along with every invention comes a problem also. Like, for example, automobile is very good to go from one place to another, but the very same automobile is causing our carbon monoxide emission, which we don't want. Mobile is very good to use, but then problem is mobile has a radioactive element. It causes headache, severe headache. Or even, I have experience, if I simply keep it here, I feel some kind of, you know, what do you call it, pain. Night, sometimes I just sleep with the mobile like this, and morning you get up and see, you feel severe pain on one side. Because it's really not good for the body. Some people keep it in the heart, you know, they keep it like this. They put it around their neck and keep it exactly in the region of the heart. You can imagine what's going to happen to heart. Isn't it? It's really not good. Similarly, we have color TVs. Color TVs are very good, but it causes color blindness. We gradually lose the power of the eyes. With every invention, there is also some problem that is associated with it, with all that invention. And as I told you earlier, the theories that are postulated or Pratyaksha Pramana, Anumana Pramana theories can always prove to be dangerous later. In my office, I used to keep this Bisleri bottle, you know. I used to use a bottle for drinking water regularly. So almost 6 or 8 months, I was using the same bottle. One day, suddenly in the internet, I got information that one girl was drinking water from a Bisleri bottle and she died. I was shocked. Why? What's the reason? Then the doctor said that Bisleri bottle should be disposed of. One should not use it for a long time, prolonged period of time. Maybe you can keep it 2 days, 5 days, 10 days. But it should not be used for months and all. Because they say over a period of time, it emits out some kind of, poisonous substances. It should not be used for a long period of time. That's why they write dispose it, right? You twist it and dispose it out. And we would never know that. You can understand it can be fatal, some of the things we are using. We don't even know them. That's the danger with Pratyaksha and Anumana. You understand the point? That means when you use your imperfect senses to understand things around us, then you may be committing blunders which may cause problems later. Like scientists are creating so many wonderful things, but later on they understand that the same wonderful things we have created lead to varieties of problems, millions of problems. Yeah. See what Darwin said. He wrote a letter to A.R. Wallace on December 22, 1857. Darwin wrote, "I am a firm believer that without speculation, or speculation means anuman lagana, there is no good and original observation. After 5 years' work, I allowed myself to speculate on the subject and drew up some short notes. These I enlarged in 1844 into a sketch of the conclusions, which seemed to me to be probable." So what Darwin did, he took different species and he tried different experiments and nothing worked. At last he said, "Let me speculate and find out which species must have come after which other species." Like that he kept them and he speculated. And if you see his writings, you'll be stand up with so much of humor. We are showing one and the next one. what he is saying about how the whale must have come. You know the whale? Like Tiningal. How it must have come. He is saying that the bear has changed into whale. How? Darwin himself is saying, you can hear from his words. In North America, the black bear was seen swimming for hours with wide open mouth. You have seen the black bear? Big one? It was opening its mouth and was catching the flies. Ah, it was shouting like that and was going in the water. It was catching like a whale, insects in water. Even in so extreme a case as this, if the supply of insects were constant, and if better adapted competitors did not already exist in the country, I can see no difficulty in a race of bears by natural selection more and more aquatic in their structure and habits, with larger and larger mouths, till a creature was produced as monstrous as a whale. This is Darwin's theory, how the whale is produced. 1964 edition, page 184. So, other scientists asked Darwin, okay, agreed, somehow or other, this bear turned into a whale, you are saying. Let us assume that what you are saying could be true. But then, the bear is a animal of land. It has got lungs, it has got hands and legs. First of all, how it can steer in the water? How it can swim in the water? He needs fins for that. How he can breathe in the water? He needs gills for respiration. You can't do with the lungs. Like for example, if I put one of you in the Atlantic Ocean middle and say, you somehow adapt yourself by natural selection, become like a fish. Do you think you can become? Even after 100 years, you will die. Do you think you are going to gradually change and become like a fish? So the lungs are lungs and gills are gills. Similarly, your hand cannot turn into things. So scientists ask, how did the bear first of all survive in the water? Darwin said, somehow it must have survived. Don't ask that. So, this is one example we have given. There are many other examples you will be surprised to know. He says, how this became a whale, and later on he says, from the whale many other aquatics came. And then again he says, the catfish, it walked out of water. Later on. And then again became a land animal. There are many things like that. So, similarly, he also told about the giraffe. You know what he said about giraffe? He said, some of the land animals, they started eating from leaves from the tree. And then they found that, because they are eating all around the tree, there was nothing available at the ground level. So they had to extend their neck. They have to extend their neck and eat like this. So they were extending their neck more and more, like this, and catching. And then what happened? There was no green thing available. So whichever animals could extend their neck the longest, they only survived. And that's why they got a long neck. He says, giraffe. And then what happened to other poor giraffes who could not extend their neck? Poor giraffe died. All that. Just imagine this scene in your mind. Poor giraffes which could not extend their neck too much, they are all lying dead here and there on the ground. Now a question may arise to you. Okay, if they didn't get something from the tree, can't they eat the greenery from the ground? Maybe we may think probably they had ego problem. Why should I put my head down and eat from the ground? Why can't I eat from the tree only? I will only eat from the tree or I will die. Did they take a vow like that? But at least for water they have to put their head down. Where will they get water from directly? They have to put their head down to drink water. So if they are putting their head down to drink water, they might have also eaten some grass also. And also there are no intermediate links of the giraffes having extending necks. There is no availability. You can see that. If he says that they gradually extended the neck, there must be many, many giraffes who died without having the ability to extend the neck, isn't it? And there are no such giraffes available. So giraffe is a unique creation of God with a long neck. That's the truth. And why to concoct something of our own like this? So we can give innumerable examples. This is like this Just So stories. You heard the Just So stories, isn't it? Who writes that? For children, they have these stories. How the elephant got the, long nose and all that. So these are like stories. And the modern man with all his so-called education, he is agreeing them to be true. It's a great joke. There is no evidence that man came from an ape. In one of the magazines called Science Digest, it's written, have you seen pictures of, semi-human being and semi-monkey? You all have seen, right? Pictures. Do you know what is the evidence of such pictures existing? He says, pure fiction. They have been drawn by artists. There is no such creation as half man, half monkey existing at all. But there are no bones available. Intermediate links are not available. And Darwin also said, to suppose that the eye could have been formed by evolution, seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. This Darwin himself said. If he says eyes cannot be a product of evolution, then how can the forms be a product of evolution? Eye is only a small part of the body. So Darwin himself certain times confessed, yes, I cannot answer this. I don't know. He said, because in fact Darwin had told the other scientists that if all the fossils are dug out and if it doesn't follow the order which I am saying, then my theory stands to be defeated. And it happened even within his life. It happened. That's why like Kansas State University and all, they have rejected Darwin's theory. They don't even teach anymore. But the problem with India is, whatever is true, it takes 3 decades to happen in India. So for another 3 decades, I think they will be teaching Darwin in school textbooks. But in foreign textbooks, already a new theory has come called snowball theory. That is also Anumana theory. You know what is snowball theory? Some group of scientists say, no, Darwin's theory is all foolish. That's not correct. Our theory is, they say, the living forms did not originate on Earth. They originated in another planet. And from there, by some atmospheric process, they have been transported to this Earth. Now it is like shifting the problem from here to there, isn't it? Now again the same old question, how did the living forms come there? Is it not? It's a simple thing. So they keep changing the truths like this. Like when I joined IIT Bombay, on the first week, I came to know, you know, like newspaper article said, there is no life on Mars. So then I thought, oh, they have found that there is no life on Mars. But I have heard from Shastra that life exists everywhere in the universe. It's not only on Earth. Many other places life is existing. Then when I was passing out of IIT, the last week, there was an article in paper, life on Mars. Now we have found out, you know, there are some organisms in Mars. They must be living underground. There are some favorable conditions. Now we are also looking at Venus. There is a lot of smoke coming up. Maybe it's from the boiling oil oceans, because of which the smoke is coming. Or it could be due to fog. And we think that the condition is favorable for living forms now. Maybe they are existing, you know. All, you know, trying to speculate through the telescopes. So, most of such speculation may or may not be true. And we cannot rely on them. This record of the rocks I told you. Man came from monkeys. Theory is defeated. Human beings and monkeys simultaneously existed millions of years ago. You see, the talk Darwin thought only 47 years ago human being came. But there are evidences of 4 lakh years ago. Humans and apes have coexisted. This is 2 million years ago, you can see. There are humans and apes existing. You can see this. Evidences now. Now, all the scientists are bringing out the evidences very courageously. Ever since the Darwin theory is in doldrums, everyone is bringing out. And there is a book called as Forbidden Archaeology. Hidden History of Human Race. There are 2 books. If you read those books, if you want to know more details, you can read those books. Forbidden Archaeology by Michael Cremo. And also Hidden History of Human Race. You can read that. They are completely black and white exposing all the fallacy of the theory with all the cheatings that were done in the past. So till now we have been seeing the Pratyaksha and Anumana, which are the general scientific methods. Now you may wonder, how can we know the truth if we want to know the real truth? That becomes a big question mark. So the third method is called the Shabda Praman, hearing from a bona fide authority, or the Vedas. Now someone may argue that just because what scientists are saying is relative truth, I don't have to necessarily accept what the Vedas say to be true. Because, you know, Vedas are saying something, but who knows it's true or not? Just like Pratyaksha and Anumana are false, the Vedas also may be written by some sages and saints, some good people, in order to bring about law and order in the world. How do we know that, you know, God must have written it? How the Shabda Praman must be giving perfect knowledge? You know, one may have such questions. According to Shabda Praman, what it says is, with our imperfect senses and these 4 defects, we cannot know the truth. Not possible. There is only one way to know the truth. What is it? Hearing from a person who can see the truth and know the truth. Now come back to that old example of the six blind men and the elephant. How did the six blind men come to know the truth? By hearing from that learned person who had the eyes to see the elephant. Correct? Similarly, if you want to know the truth, somebody who can clearly see the truth, or in other words, somebody who has no four defects, somebody who is free from four defects, only such a person can tell the truth to all other living beings who are afflicted by these four defects. Now, all of us are like the six blind men because we have four defects. We cannot see the truth. Now, we need somebody amongst us who will not have the four defects, who can tell us the truth. Then we can come to know the truth. Is that point clear to you? Say, for example, anybody has a Reynolds pen with you? Taken with? Or not this one? Other Reynolds pen anybody has? Check. This one? Exactly. This is the one I wanted to ask. Okay. Say, imagine that I am standing near a blackboard and I am showing this and ask all of you, what is this? What do you think people would say? Immediately they would say, you are having a chalk in hand. So how did they arrive at the answer? Maybe he is having a chalk in hand, he may want to write on the board. But then now I can tell him the truth. Now, my dear friend, this is not a chalk, this is a pen. This is a Reynolds pen. And then he tells him the truth. It's not a chalk, it's a pen. And he says. And everyone in the room can come to know that it's not a chalk, it's a pen. So that is how the truth is understood. Somebody who can perceive the truth without four defects, if he can tell the truth, then everyone can come to know the truth. That is hearing from a bona fide authority. That's what is called as Shraddha Praman. Now, the Vedas say how the knowledge is coming. See, when we say Vedas, it is not only spiritual knowledge. The Vedas contain many other things also. Can any of you say how even the modern man who has no faith in God, even he finds Vedas very helpful in his practical life in so many different ways? Can some of you say? I can think of a dozen fields in which the Vedas are helping the modern man. Even those who don't believe in God, they take help of the Vedas for getting help. Can you think of something? Yeah? Yeah, you can tell the mic. You can give the mic.
Modern man is utilizing now
Ayurveda science. Yeah. In fact, Ayurveda can cure some of the diseases which are incurable by allopathy also. Like, for example, some people have the skin disease, you know, like white leprosy kind of thing. What do you call that? Even dermatologists are not able to solve that problem. You have seen people having white patches in the body? It's some kind of. So that is curable by Ayurveda. There are some particular herbs by which they cure that disease also. Anything else like that?
Yoga,
very true. Yeah, modern man is benefiting from yogasanas. The famous Ramdev Baba, isn't it? He's teaching in television and thousands of people attend his programs and they're charging heavy prices for that. And people go, they learn Kapalabhati, they learn different types of yogasanas to keep the body hale and healthy. So even those who may not have so much faith in God, even still they also want to learn these things. I think Vedas contain valuable information. Anything else? So Patanjali Yoga Sutra teaches all the yogas. Because there comes the Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Asana, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi, everything is there. Then anything else?
Meditation,
very correct. Meditation gives peace of mind. Who said that? Very nice. So meditation helps in concentration, meditation helps in getting peace of mind, meditation keeps the rhythm of the body very well, it keeps us hale and healthy also, and a person becomes calm, cool, collected, composed, and many other things happen by meditation. Doctors have measured the level of lactate in the blood and the level of glucose, fructose, everything in the body, and they say those who meditate have a very tenacious immunity system also, they get. Physically they become healthy, mentally they become very determined and decisive, and they become free from confusion, they have clarity of thinking, and they have good power of discrimination, and they have courage, self-confidence, memory, all that you get by meditation. So meditation is also learned from the scriptures. Nowadays many American companies have meditation halls that people come to meditate. So nobody considers meditation or chanting nowadays as a outdated thing or obsolete thing. People are happily accepting it. Anything else? Different? Arts and music also we are taking from the Vedas, yeah. Like Bharatanatyam, singing, dramatic drama also, yeah. It also gives knowledge about economics, yeah. Yes. Like for example, there is astrology also, yeah. Astronomy, astrology, all are available. There is also metallurgy in the Vedas. For example, NASA, they have researched and found out in the Vedas there are some high strength to weight ratio metals. The proportion of the different ingredients are given. You all have heard of Saranath pillar in Varanasi? That never rusts, even in such a climatic condition. For so many years it's existing. How? Because the alloy is made in such a way that it will never rust. It can exist for a very long period of time. So in the Vedas you find valuable information regarding the. That's why they want to study Sanskrit and they want to get all information from there. They have very valuable information. Even material information. Anything else? Vastu Shastra, very true. Now Vastu Shastra is becoming more and more famous now. In Paris, there used to be a fire accident happening in a building. Almost a dozen times it has happened. Now they found out according to Vastu there is a serious problem. According to Vastu, in the Agni side, one should make kitchen. And then in the Jala side, one should have the water tank. Things like that. There are different places where you should have different things. The entrance should be from different side. So that Paris building, they demolished the whole building. It was worth several millions of dollars. Now they reconstructed it. And now there are no more fire accidents there. According to Vastu, they have designed it. So Vastu comes from the Puranas, yeah. Vastu Shastra. Anything else? Chanting mantra, which is also meditation. Yeah. Then? Anything else? He's saying about magic. I don't know, there is certainly magic as one of the arts. But the modern magic which Sarkar and all are doing, I doubt whether such things are being taught in the Vedic times. I don't know. But certainly there are like that madam said there are 64 different colors which are explained. Like many, many things are explained. Anything else? Yeah? Rasayana Shastra, yeah. Like alchemy, for example, by which you transform soft iron core into gold. Such very strange sutras are given. Vedic mathematics, isn't it? Yeah. Vedic mathematics can solve. If you want to solve a 15 digit, number by 15-digit number, you want to write answer to that, you can put a line and multiply them and write directly the answer. You don't have to take several steps. Like a calculator can write, there are sutras for that available in Vedic mathematics. Very easy to use sutras. So, that means the Vedas contain material information and spiritual information. The Vedas are actually giving us something for the body, mind and the soul. All the three. Now when you talk about the mind, Vedas talk about man's psychology, woman's psychology. Like how a man and woman, if they marry, they have to know each other's psychology and nature so that they can deal with one another in such a way. Like the Vedas are very mature in that respect, if you see. Like when they marry, they see the ganas and all, right? Whether one is, what time they should be married, and...
Oh, are you saying that there's no power supply, power time?
So, yatha ruchi, yatha mati, it is said. According to one's taste and one's temperament, they should be married. Man and woman, not based on the superficial look. In the modern times, even after so much of education, modern man thinks marriage should be based on superficial attraction. Like a man thinks, is the woman beautiful enough to satisfy me? And the woman is thinking, is the man's pocket big enough to fulfill all my demands. He is having enough car, bungalow, enough money and everything. So this kind of superficial outlook has led to divorces in the modern times. But the Vedas teach how the matchmaking should be done. If the man is Asuragan, the woman should be Asuragan also. If the man is Devagan, the woman should be Devagan. If one is Devagan, another one is Asuragan. You know, then there will be terrible problem at home. Like, you know, for the Shudras, they only had the yoni match. Because for them, sex life is the most important thing. But for the Brahmanas, they have superior matches because Brahmanas act at the level of intellect. So for them, the matchmaking is done differently. So these things, subtle things are given in the Vedas, which make us understand that the Vedas are very deep and profound in thinking. They know the psychology of child, man, old people, everything very detailed. So Vedas talk about the body, mind and soul, all the three. They are not just superficial. And they also contain a spiritual information also. And the Vedas say, the Vedas were originally given by God Himself. It said, evam parampara praptam imam raja rishiyo viduhu. Like it is said in the scriptures, in the Vedas it is said, that Krishna gives the Vedas to four people. Brahma, Shri, which is Lakshmiji. Shri means Lakshmi. And he also gives Rudra, or Lord Shiva. And the four Kumaras, Chatush Kumaras. And these four people form the four Sampradayas. Sampradaya means a disabled line. And our society, ISKCON society, comes under the Brahma Sampradaya. So we have shown only that here. Lord Krishna gives knowledge to Brahma, Brahma gives knowledge to Narada, and then it's coming down the line. Narada gives to Vyas. It's coming down, there's a long lineage down. And the recent times, 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the same Sampradaya. And then later on, many other acharyas like Vishwanatha Thakur, Baladeva Vidya Bhushan. And then later on, we had Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Saraswati. And then His Divine Grace, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So we are coming in this line. This is called a Sampradaya. So the knowledge is given by one guru to his disciple, and the disciple gives to the next disciple. It's coming down. So my guru, for example, is one of Radhanath Swami. He is a disciple of Prabhupada. So now I am getting the knowledge from him and I am giving everyone. You understand? So the Shastras say, if you really want the knowledge, then you have to connect yourself to the parampara. Only then you can get knowledge. Just like, now I want the electric lights to be on here. What I should do? How can I get the bulbs on? Further, I have to connect myself to the post, isn't it? Because in the post, the electricity is available. Of course, I can't do it illegally. I have to take permission from the electricity board, isn't it? So they will help me to get connected to the supply. So from one post to another post, the electricity is coming. But then originally there is a hydroelectric power station where the electricity is produced. And then it is supplied to all the EBs and everything. Similarly, the truth is ultimately given by God Himself, and the Veda means knowledge. It is spoken by Him. And coming down into this epic land. How can we understand the Supreme Person who is creator of infinite gigantic universes? What is the possibility? How can we know Him? Tene Brahma Hridayadi Kavaye. In Srimad Bhagavatam, first verse it is said, the Vedic knowledge was revealed by the Supreme Person within the heart of the first created being, Brahma. Tene Brahma Hridayadi Kavaye. So Brahma is the first created living being in this world, and in His heart the knowledge was revealed, it is said in the Vedas. Vedic wisdom came down in disciplic succession through oral reception, by hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam says that people in this particular age in which we are living now, it's called as Kali Yuga, people will be mandaha. Manda means people will be lazy for spiritual life. They will say, I am not interested. Correct? You go out and call people to come to this program, how many people you think will come? Not many will be interested. They will say, sorry, I have no time, not interested. They will be lazy. Sumanda Matayaha means they are misguided in their life also. What is the misguidance? What will give them suffering? They think that it will give them enjoyment. What will give them true happiness in life? That they want to discard. And Manda Bhagyaha, they are very unlucky. Why unlucky? Because they have to work very hard to earn money. But even after earning money, they can't enjoy life. There's no time for that. They work so hard. And he upadritaha. And their minds are always disturbed. This is the condition of people in Kali Yuga.
So because of this,
Vedavyas
thought that in this age it's better that I write down all the Vedas. Because in the Vedic times, you know how they taught the Vedas? They would never have any writing. They would only speak orally and other person would memorize. Even when I learnt part of the Vedas, they taught me like this only. Like my teacher used to teach. Harihi Om. Then we all would say two times. Harihi Om. Harihi Om. Samno Mitra Shambarunaha. Samno Mitra Shambarunaha. Samno Mitra Shambarunaha. Samno Bhavat Paryamam. So he would chant once and he would chant twice. And that's all. He never gave us any book. He asked for the book. He said, no book. You have to just hear and recite. That's how the Vedas were taught. And people would remember them. People would remember volumes and volumes of information because they were called Shruti Dhar. Shruti Dhar means they would Shruti Dhar. Jo suna usko dharan kar sakte hain, unko Shruti Dhar bolte hain. Whatever you heard, you can hold it in your memory. Then you call Shruti Dhar. So thousands and thousands of verses are written in Vedas. There are 1 lakh verses in the Vedas. So they all came down like that. But Vedavyas thought that 5000 years ago Kali Yuga began. So he wrote it all down in the Vedas. But people may forget them or not remember them. You can't even remember a mobile number. You have to note down. Isn't it? So Vedavyas thought, better I put it in writing, otherwise they will forget the Vedas. Put it in writing. The Vedas are also called Shrutis or knowledge received through oral reception, which means by hearing. The means of Vedic knowledge is to accept an authority or a guru and learn the truth by inquiring submissively. Vedas offer insight to all these questions. Who am I? Where have I come from? Where do I go after death? All these questions are answered in the Vedas. What is life all about? What is the purpose of my existence? Who is God? How am I related to God? All these questions are answered. You see, Vedas are so vast. There is Shruti, Smriti and Nyai. Three sections of the Vedas. Under the Shruti comes the Vedas and Upavedas and the Vedangas. The details are given here. And the Smritis, they mainly carry the rituals, the Tantras, the Pancharatras, the Puranas, the Itihasas, the histories, like Mahabharata, Ramayana, epics. And the Shaddarshanas, they all are coming under Smriti. So the difference between Shruti and Smriti is, Shruti is revealed absolute truth, and every word unchanged eternally. That means these things are given by God Himself directly, Shruti. And Smriti is composed by the sages. Wording may change from age to age, but actually it's the same message. And Smriti carries practical, understandable truths written by the sages. For example, I'll put it more simply. In Indian Penal Code, for example, there are many theorems to be remembered. Lawyers remember them, you know, and they're very, very difficult to remember. Some of the codes are so tough to remember. But then sometimes they take case studies. There was one Ramu who had a land, and there was another Somu, he had a land also. One day they both had a fight. Ramu encroached on Somu's land, and Somu cut off his leg. And Ramu became angry, and Ramu cut off Somu's hand, you know. And then they both went to the court, and then they make a theorem. Okay, if two people possess the land like this, they argue like this, and this is it. Then they come up with a nice theorem, which will be just like a principle, which cannot, I mean, after understanding the example, it is easy for you to memorize the theorem with understanding. Similarly, the Shruti and Nyay Prasthan, they are very tough. They are like codes. Anandamaya Vyasa, Atato Brahma Jignasa, Rasovaisaha. They are like very small codes, you know, and you can't understand them. But the elaboration of them is given in the Smriti, and that's all available. So Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasa Chaham Rishani Vishwa Matta Sinti Jnana Apoharam Cha Vedaischa Sarvait Ahameva Vedyo Vedanta Krit Veda Videva Chaham. If you see the third line, the Vedaischa Sarvait Ahameva Vedyo means, the meaning, by all the Vedas am I to be known. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, and see it in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and I am the knower of the Vedas. So,
it is up to the individual whether to put faith in the authoritative words of Krishna or not. One has the choice. We are presenting the Vedic truths to you, not with the desire to impose the Vedic truths on you, but you have heard about Pratyaksha and Anumana. And certainly you can consider what the Vedas have got to say, and check whether what they are saying is true or not. And if it is acceptable, then you may accept them. So we have come to the conclusion of the session. So these are the things we learned today, isn't it? There are three ways of gaining knowledge: Pratyaksha, Anumana, Shabda. We discussed about them. Then we discussed about the four defects. You all remember the four defects? Imperfect senses, to be illusion, to commit mistakes, and cheating propensity. Yeah. Then Anumana Pramana is guesswork or hypothesis. We learned about that also. Then we discussed elaborately on Darwin's theory, which was Anumana example. Then we discussed about the Shabda Pramana, hearing from a bona fide authority about absolute truth. Like the story of six blind men. They heard from a bona fide authority who had the eyes, and they got the knowledge. And Shabda Pramana gives absolute knowledge and is most reliable and definite way of obtaining knowledge. See, the Vedas claim that whatever we are saying is true. Whether you can immediately perceive it or not, they are true, they are saying. For example, the cow dung, according to Vedas, if you touch stool, you have to wash your hands with soap. When somebody goes to bathroom, you have to wash their hands with soap. Whereas when you touch the cow dung, the Vedas say that it is very nice. Cow dung is very pure and auspicious. So you may wonder how. After all, cow dung is the stool of an animal. Is it not dirty? Vedas say, no, it's not dirty. It's very pure. And only recently, some few decades ago, scientists found out in Calcutta that the cow dung has many antiseptic properties. They found out that it's not impure at all, it is very pure. So whatever the Vedas say are becoming more and more proved by the modern man. Like, Vedas suggest us to eat organic food, isn't it? Clean food without any fertilizer. Man began from organic food, then went on to fertilizer, pesticide, insecticide, everything. Finally, he has back to square, he has come back to organic food now. Everyone prefers organic food, and it is very costly nowadays. If you want to have organic vegetables, free from fertilizer and everything. So, we have discussed a little bit about the Shabda Praman in this chapter, and in the next session we will discuss more in detail about Shabda Praman, hearing from a bona fide authority. But hearing from a bona fide authority is very important. Why? Because without hearing from a perfect person, God is the ultimate perfect person, he has no four defects, he only can give the truth. Without hearing from such an authoritative person, we can never know the truth. Like, for example, you know the meaning of the word darshan? You heard this word darshan? Darshan has a double meaning word. Darshan means to see, isn't it? To see someone, to have darshan of someone, we say. But darshan also means philosophy. Why? Because the philosophy gives you the insight to see the truth. By hearing that philosophy. For example, say if Bill Gates is sitting in this room now, I will not know simply by seeing, because I have never seen his photograph. But if somebody tells me, do you know the person who is sitting behind? He is Mr. Bill Gates. Then immediately what we will do, we will wish him appreciation or something, we will welcome him. Mr. Bill Gates has come to attend the program. I will be very happy. So how did I gain that knowledge? Because somebody told me. Somebody introduced me about him. Then I could understand. You understand the point? So we have to hear from an authority. For example, if something is kept on the table, say, like my mother once, my father brought this naphthalene balls from the market, So that was the first time in my life I saw naphthalene balls, It was in a packet and nice smell was coming. I immediately took it out of his bag and I opened the packet and I took one in my hand. It was glowing, glowing white. And I thought, nice peppermint, I was about to put it in my mouth. And my mother snatched it from me, And she didn't let me eat. I said, only one I want, at least one you give me. She said, nothing doing. She took away all the naphthalene balls and I chased after her and I was crying, weeping, raising my hands and legs. She didn't give me at all. She said, if you eat this, you will die, she said. I couldn't believe. How can such a nice smelling thing be, the cause of death? It is so delicious, it looks delicious. So, she knows the knowledge and she corrected me. Similarly, many things in this world appear glittering and very attractive. All that glitters, you know the saying, all that glitters is not gold. So there are many things in this world that allure us and attract us, but they are not meant for our good. They are not going to give us true happiness. So that is why we have to hear from a bona fide authority. Only then we can know. Otherwise it's impossible to know the truth. Pratyaksha Anumana have failed, and we can give many, many more evidences to show how Pratyaksha Anumana have brought the world to a messy state like as we are now in the modern world. But the Shabda Praman is claiming that it is giving the perfect truth. And you don't have to blindly accept it. Just because Vedas are saying you accept it, you don't have to accept that. The next session we'll be researching more into whether the Vedas are really true or not, or are they giving something valuable to us, or why should we put faith in them. We will go deeper into that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. We can take one question. Anybody? Yeah. Sir. That is not Shabda Praman. Who says this Shabda Praman?
At least we think those are the bona fide people, and
who are the bona fide people?
The scientists.
No, at what time did you join the lecture? Aapne kitne baje lecture join kiya idhar?
Maine aaj hi join kiya.
Aaj hi pehle se na. So scientists are only doing work with Pratyaksha and Anumana. They have nothing to say about Shabda. Shabda means the Vedas. Shabda Praman is the Vedas. But science is only talking about Pratyaksha and Anumana. Now what's your question?
Authorized person.
That's why my question is the authorized person the scientist, or is the authorized person the Vedic knowledge that's coming down? So we have to decide that. Like, you know, whom do we want to accept as our authority for gaining knowledge? Should we hear from the scientists with poor defects? And they are committing all blunder, as we said today. How should we hear from the Vedas, which claim to be giving knowledge which is free from four defects? So the choice is ours. As far as the moon expedition you are talking about is concerned, it is the scientists themselves who deny that man visited the moon. They say in 1969, when America claimed that they have sent Neil Armstrong to moon, they say they did that only because there was a Cold War going on between Russia and America. And there was a competition who will send man to the moon first. So there is a book called as Man Never Went to Moon by Dr. K. Singh, who is from NASA. He has worked in NASA before. Later on he came out of NASA. And he is giving almost 150 to 200 companies evidences, which all agree that man never went to moon in America. So he says that it was simply a computer simulation which was shown on the TV. There is nothing, no element of truth. In Area 151, which is a military area in America, they used that place to do the simulation. And they have just shown it. Man actually never went to moon. That's what the book says.
That is, I am saying, we are ignorant people. We do not know anything.
Yeah.
If they have to put knowledge in the man, we go for the expert people.
Yeah.
If I want to know about the medical science, I will go. I will go. Doctor.
Yeah.
यदि मेरे को साइंटिफिक के बारे में चाहिए तो मुझे इसकी बात मालूम
है. Yeah, yeah, correct.
So that is the authorized person for me.
Yeah. So why the scientists are not authorized people? Because they have also got four defects, and one of the defects is cheating propensity, and that's why they have cheated. Yeah. So they may cheat, and we can give innumerable examples. In one of our books, we have heckles, fraudulent charts. We have given a explanation about that. So some scientists have used fraudulent charts. They have done that. And it is not only with scientists, with any human being, normal human being, they are subject to four defects. But the Vedas say, if someone follows the knowledge of the Vedas, like for example, I may be an imperfect person, but if I gain the perfect knowledge and I give you, for example, the Reynolds pen I was telling you, correct? So now for me it looks like chalk. But I tell you that although it looks like chalk for me and you, it is not a chalk, it's a pen. I will tell you the truth what the Vedas are saying. Then that knowledge is perfect. You understand, no? You all understand what I am saying? Is that point clear to you? Those people with four defects, they cannot give us perfect knowledge about the truth. Now, somebody may ask, why do we need perfect knowledge? Somebody may ask, what is the need? Can someone say? Why are we so much worrying about the absolute truth? Okay, scientists are giving relative truth. So what's the problem? Is there any problem or there is no problem? You all have to say. Okay, anyway, although scientists are giving relative truth, they are also giving nice luxuries. You know, they are giving aeroplanes, they are giving mobiles, they are giving washing machines and televisions. They are after all not bad people, they are given nice facilities and all. So why can't we be happy with that? But also it is interesting to know how the water is formed. We have some eagerness to know about the things around us. There's nothing wrong. But my question is different. What I am asking, if scientists are giving relative knowledge, so what? Why can't we be satisfied with that? Why do we need absolute knowledge? Yes, madam? It has zero defect, okay. So why do we want to know that knowledge which has zero defect, which is perfect knowledge about everything around us? Which helps? It helps in self-realization. Okay. Exactly. She's saying that despite all these luxuries and comforts that we use, that scientists have given us, still our mind and heart is not satisfied. We are like a fish out of water, isn't it? Who is given, you know, a mobile, you know, he's given a television, he's given magazines to read, he's given currency notes. He's not happy with all that. Because we are still seeking for happiness. That means the luxuries are not able to give us everlasting happiness. So we are not happy. That we are going to come in the next session. What she said was a very precise answer to the question. We have money, but we have no happiness. We have luxuries, but we have no happiness. In fact, modern man is suffering a mental related illness far more than the people who lived in previous decades. So we are looking for absolute knowledge because we want to know what is life, what is God. Science is not even giving perfect knowledge about the material things which we see around us. Then what is it called spiritual things? How can they give any perfect knowledge? Nobody knows where the sky ends. Scientists cannot find that out because the planets are all so far, far away. There are millions and millions of planets. There are so many galaxies. Scientists can only... we are like a very puny creature in this whole creation. So, scientists are unable to estimate the purpose of life and meaning of life, which is very important for us to know because we all are going to grow from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age and one day we will die. But before we die, we have to know why are we living? What is the meaning of life? Why do we wake up in the morning, we eat our food and we go to office, we come back home. Again and again the same routine is going on and gradually the body falls apart. Why are we living? So they are unable to give any good reason for that. So now this is leading us to the next session where we will discuss it more tomorrow. So today's session was clear to everyone. No confusion. So you all enjoyed those optic illusions. We understood about our own eyes, isn't it? How defective they are. They are putting us in bewildering situations which are actually not true. In a non-moving paper, which is simply a mere drawing, it shows, you know, moving cylinders, moving circles and all this. Such is the defect of our eyes. So when we understand these defects, it makes us humble. We understand that, you know, our senses are not all that perfect. They have a limited range, and even within that limited range also they are subjecting us to illusion. It's not perfect knowledge. So instead of depending on this imperfect senses, we need someone who can give us perfect knowledge. And tomorrow let's discuss more if you have further questions on why do we accept Vedas? Is it not a blind faith to accept Vedas, Vedic truth? And we will see tomorrow. Thank you very much.